Take a unique look at the National Football League with Pro Football View from the East, a program dedicated to bringing listeners in-depth coverage on all 32 teams. Join host Joe Tufaro, a lifelong Giants fan, and Dennis Agapito, a die-hard Jets fan, as they offer up hard-hitting opinions and analysis on the NFL from a New York perspective. So, let's start the show. From the East, here's Joe and Dennis.
And that's right, folks. Here we go again with another fantastic episode of Pro Football View from the East. This is one of your hosts, Dennis Agapito. And, of course, I'm joined by a man who is very, very happy because his team is now in first place after a very, very dramatic victory right at the end there, the New York Giants pulling it out against the San Francisco 49ers. It's Joe Tufaro. So, Joe, how you doing, my friend?
Good, good. I want, you know, we need to refer to them as the first place New York Giants for the remainder of the show, if you don't mind. And of course, I'm also happy because Mr. Cespedes plays for us, and the Mets made a nice comeback last night themselves, and wasn't quite as dramatic, but it was quick and it was decisive, and it was fun to watch. So we'll see where that goes tonight.
Yeah, Joe is kind of heading into sports nirvana. His first place New York Giants and his series leading New York Mets in the playoffs right now against the Los Angeles Dodgers. But let's get into a little bit of football news, kind of some things that Joe and I have been discussing in the past. And I want to get Joe's perspective on this because it's right. Kind of hits home with his team there, the New York Giants. And Joe and I have been discussing the first place New York Giants. Excuse me. Let me write that down somewhere. First place New York Giants, of course. But Joe and I have been discussing for quite a number of episodes, if you've been following along, the Jason Pierre-Paul situation. And I found this article by Bob Glauber, who writes for Newsday, which is a Long Island newspaper. And I found it very interesting. It's all about Jason Pierre-Paul situation and his agent. I really wanted to get Joe's perspective on this. Joe, I'm going to read you some of what Ralph Sindrich, who is Jason Pierre-Paul's agent, said about the way that they've sort of handled this situation. I wanted to get your input on it. I'm gonna read you, quote, "I don't get it with what's going on with Jason Pierre-Paul," end quote, said Sindrich, who has written a book, open quote, "NFL Brawler," end quote, detailing his experiences as a player and agent in a career spanning 40 years. Now, here's a quote that I really want to get your opinion on. "You don't have an obligation to cooperate with the team, question mark. They don't have a right to know, question mark. I think it's pretty obvious. It's pretty much screwed up when you have those circumstances. If the guy can ever come back, you don't want the stigma of a total failure to cooperate." So, Joe, the floor is yours.
Yeah, well, he's right in that respect, but he's got to look in the mirror. And again, he's writing a book, so obviously he needs to get his name out there, and he wants to put the best light on this, maybe for himself as possible. But if you look at it, he's the one who's supposed to be leading this whole thing. He's supposed to be the one that goes to the player and says, this is how we should handle this. This is how it's done. He's the one who meets with the team. You know, when the Giants sent Ronnie Barnes down there to see if JPP was okay, they're the ones who said, you're not allowed to go in and see him. So, and if the player did that, he should have come out and said, against my advice, players decided not to see it. If he's trying to say, oh, I would have done this completely different, he can't take his hands off it now and say, I don't know what's going on. I don't know why we can't settle this. I don't know why we can't come to an agreement. You know, because because JPP wants to stay in Miami, or he wants to play deal with his own doctors. I think he's very disingenuous. I think if he wants this settled, he gets them together and he figures out a plan. And that's what you do. You go to New Jersey, you sit down with the guys and you say, what do you want to have done to have him come back? And what can you offer us if he does everything you want to do? It's a very simple question. And maybe I'm making it a little bit too simple, but you know, there's a CBA in place. They all know the rules that they're playing by. Everybody's read this thing and signed it before it became the law of the land for the NFL. Figure it out. go up there and say, make us an offer. Can you pay us half of the $14 million if we play half the time? Then we'll put, you know, what's the program going to be? What's he going to be doing? What's, where do you need us? Where do you want us? There has to be, he has to start the conversation. And if he's saying that the player is the one that's saying, I'll sit out a year because somebody else will pay me next year, then say that straight out. But he can't say he's suddenly innocent in this whole thing, because he obviously has some input, and I would imagine has a lot of input. I can't see him just taking what JPP said and just going along with it and not having a comeback for it.
Yeah, do you think this, that the agent, I mean, that he has a responsibility to maybe even put himself out there as far as to say, look, I'm not going to represent you anymore if you don't kind of do it this way? I mean, is that possible?
Well, yeah, because guess what? He's not getting any money either. Now, again, is he sitting back saying, you know I can go to, and I always use the same example, so I'm not picking on anybody's team, but, you know, can I go to a Raiders team? Can I go to a Tampa Bay team who's got money, or even a Dallas team, and say, hey, you know, this guy's going to be free next year. What are you willing to pay him if we go through this rehab and we tell you he's fine? And by the way, who cares if he's fine? Wrap him up and send him out there. Wouldn't that be a great thing for your team? So, but I don't see an agent taking that kind of a risk when he's got a team in front of him who would gladly deal with him if they just let him. And again, I think you're right, Dennis. I think at some point he's got to say, look, he's going against all my advice, so I'm out of this, because I don't want to be seen as being difficult. I don't want to be seen as the type of guy who doesn't want to deal with teams, because it's a stain on his reputation. Look at guys like, and again, they're very successful, but look at guys like Scott Boras and stuff like that. As soon as you hear their name, you know there's a problem, right? You know that there's going to be an issue.
Yeah.
You're walking in the door that you don't want to deal with them, that there's going to be things that you have to deal with. So unless this guy wants to try to become that, I think he should just say, look, Jason, this is the way we're going to do this, or I'm not doing it. And you can go on by yourself.
You know, the interesting thing here, Joe, is that one of the reasons why JPP didn't sign his tender in the first place, the first place Giants control his rights, right?
Mm-hmm.
As of now, unless they rescind the tender. So he can't get paid by another team. The Giants have his rights. But the reason why he didn't sign the tender was because he was trying to milk every dime out of the Giants. He was going to show up after week two and say, look, here I am. Let me get my $870,000 a week, and I've only missed 2 weeks. But here was the point of them taking control, putting him on non-football injury. One, if they put him on non-football injury, we've gone over this. They didn't have to pay him. And let's say they didn't pay him, and he was on reserve non-football injury right now, rehabbing under Giants control, actually under contract, whatever the parameters of the contract was, even if they changed it. But he was not getting paid while on non-football injury. Well, guess what? He has to stay on non-football injury for 6 weeks. It's coming up on week six. Then they could make him active if he was able to become active. Week six is this week. He's already not getting paid for 6 weeks. So by having this adversarial approach, he's in the same position he would have been in if he was on non-football injury. Here's the kicker, and we discussed this. There's such a thing in the NFL called a split contract, okay, where if you're on certain lists, you get paid less money than you do if you're on the active roster. I believe this wholeheartedly. The Giants would have provided a split contract for Jason Pierre-Paul. He would have had to been paid about $25,000 per week per salary rules in the NFL if they provided a split contract and gave him a salary. But you know what? He certainly would have been better off working with the Giants, working with their medical staff, making $25,000 a week for the last 6 weeks, been sitting home being in limbo, Joe, and I just don't get it. And you just to quickly, and then I'll let you jump in, is about next year. Look, because Jason Pierre-Paul is probably missing this entire season, what a team can do is they can give him a minimum salary, which will be about $760,000, not guaranteed, and give him an incentive laden contract, which means that if he gets 5 sacks or whatever, but they won't count on the other team's salary cap, and here's why. Because those incentives will be unlikely to be earned because he didn't play this year. That's the way it goes. It goes from the year before. Since if he doesn't play this year, even 1 sack, and they say, we'll give you a $1 million bonus, won't count on the team's salary cap till the next year. Now, if he never plays and gets cut, hey, no harm, no foul. It was a non-guaranteed contract to begin with. So that's what they're looking at. I don't think, Joe, any team is going to give guaranteed money going into next year if the Giants decide to let him walk after this year, which I believe they will. The first place Giants, excuse me.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Nice catch. I agree with you that that I don't think anybody's going to give him guaranteed money. Again, there's always somebody out there to pay you. But what a ridiculous move to not get the team, again, the only team that can pay you. How ridiculous is it not to let them control your medical advice and, again, work with the best doctors in the world while getting paid for it? And for them to then go to Jerry Reese and say, he'll be ready to play. Maybe they would have gone to him and said, he'll be ready to play by week six. Now go talk to his agent. Or he'll be ready to play by week eight. Go talk to his agent. And we'll give you this deal. We'll pay you this much while you're doing this, while you're rehabbing. Then we'll sign you to an eight-year deal. By the way, do you want an extension? You know, or do we make it incentive laden so that, again, we can see if you really can play? But they have to be comfortable. And it goes towards our next topic, you know, of health in the locker room also. They have to be comfortable with what he's dealing with and how it's all going to work out. And right now, without any information, why would they give him a penny? And why do they – again, I think we're the only ones talking about it. I'm sure inside the walls of Giants camp, there's not a mention of his name. They figure he's not coming back. This is how he wants to play it. We'll move on. We may have moved on without him anyway next year. I guess we're going to do that, and that's it. Just go right ahead, and we'll move on.
Yeah, I guess the point ultimately here is we said this from the beginning. I believe this to be true, that I believe the Giants would have paid him something. He would have been on non-football injury. The Giants would have paid him something. And you know what? If he spent the whole year on non-football injury, then they would have paid him X per week while being on non-football injury, and they would have just said, hey, look, we did this as a good faith effort towards you. And you know what? That would have been more than fair, given the fact that the first-place Giants have done nothing wrong in this situation. Again, the point is this, and you made it very strongly, Joe, and I agree with you. The agent has a responsibility here. He's attempting to get hands dirty at all, no pun intended, but I think that some of this definitely, some of it, if not a lot of it, falls back upon the agent's responsibility to Jason Pierre-Paul, the person first, and the player second, to put him in the best situation for him medically, physically, emotionally, to move forward with an organization that has supported him. I think he did a very poor job. And with that, we'll move on to another issue with the Giants, which I want to discuss with Joe, which is the tight end Daniel Fells. Right now, I don't know, maybe most listening audience kind of knows what's going on with him, but he developed a MRSA infection, which most people know is basically short staff infection would be kind of the commonly used term. And it doesn't respond to regular antibiotics or penicillin. And he's had several surgeries already. There's some issues of them talking about maybe him losing his foot. Doesn't sound like that's going to happen. Let's hope for the best for him. It does sound like his career is likely over. So Joe, I mean, what's just a terrible situation, but you know, how does this, you know, a little bit about this more than I do. So I'd like to get your input on how this comes about, what teams have to do to try to prevent this. And if something does happen like this, how they sort of move forward and make sure that no one else gets infected. I know that this happened with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to a couple of players, Carl Nixon, one of the kickers. So they had an issue with it. And it's very serious, and it could be very hard to kind of wipe away completely out of your locker room. But so why don't you give us your perspective on what's going on with Daniel Fells in the organization right now?
Yeah, it was Lawrence Tynes, as a matter of fact, who had left the Giants and then was in Tampa. And I'm sure there's been, you know, investigation into did it happen to him here before he went down to Tampa or whatever. So, you know, you hope that that's not the case. Look, it's one of these things that gets into the locker room, brought in from outside somehow. And again, it's not that it can't be killed. One of the companies I deal with has a product that actually will kill the MRSA on contact. We're putting together a cream, like a Neosporin type cream that you can put on open wounds that would kill it on contact. But it all comes down with washing down your showers. You know, you've got, as you can imagine, Dennis, you know, you've been in locker rooms with 10 guys. Can you imagine being in a locker room with 50? And everybody living a different type of lifestyle and everybody doing different things. And as Eli said, you know, we got the – after it happened, Eli said, yeah, we got the conversation this morning about, you know, this Purell at every turn in the facility. Make sure you clean your hands. Make sure you wash. Make sure you take a shower. But, you know, they have to sanitize the showers. They have to sanitize all of the fixtures that you use on a daily basis in the locker room and in the facility. And it's a constant battle to keep everything at bay, obviously. And then when you have something like this that's introduced that doesn't respond to normal cleaning procedures, you have to find companies that come in and spray things down on a regular basis and make sure everything's sanitized. And the, you know, the purpose of our company is, and I don't want to do a commercial here, but is, you know, we try to use an all-natural product because putting bleach over everything isn't the answer either, because some of that can, you know, you don't really want to be walking around in a hospital in your locker room either. So it comes from different areas, and it doesn't always respond to everything. And, you know, it's a matter, again, of getting everybody on the same page to be as clean and as sanitized as possible. But, again, you've got 50 guys and their families and guests and visitors and everybody else in and out of there on a regular basis, and you can't keep track of it all. And it's a terrible situation for Daniel. You know, obviously we all feel for him, and they said, you know, they dedicated the game to him the other night. Thank God they won. you know, gave him the game ball through Skype because you really can't go visit him. I guess Coach Coughlin did go visit him the other night and said that he had gotten – 3 nights of sleep, which is big. It's not, you know, he's not feeling any discomfort anymore, so they think that he's responding. But again, it's one of these things, Dennis, where you try different things. You know, there's no set, oh, you have this, so we will inject you with this and it'll be done in 3 days. They have to come up with different cocktails, if you will, of different things to give him and then watch and see if he responds to it. And if not, so it's a long, long process. And, like you said, hopefully he's going to be okay and he's not going to lose his leg. And as Tom said, you know, we just hope he can get back to his family pretty soon and get released from the hospital and get on his way to full recovery, you know, non-football recovery. Again, this is the personal side, not the personnel side. You know, let's get him back home with his family and do whatever we can for him. And, of course, the Giants, you know, will do anything they can for him. They'll pay for everything and handle it. So, you know. Hopefully it gets better from there and nothing else comes out of it.
Yeah, it's very disappointing for him. And it's a sad situation that his career ends this way. I mean, he didn't really do anything. He had unfortunately contracted this infection, which has now pretty much ended his football career. You made a very good point. We're all hoping, let the guy just get healthy, get home to his family, and they'll figure things out from there. That's first and foremost. But it was something that, you know, had taken precedence in the news that I wanted to get your input on. I knew you had some additional information and some dealings with this particular issue. So I definitely, besides the fact that he's still a member of the First Place Giants, even though he's recovering, you also had some input as far as the MRSA infection itself and how to sort of how they treat it, how they keep the locker rooms clean and how they sanitize it before and to prevent this from ever happening. If it does, how they sort of get it so that it won't happen in the future. And we're all wishing Daniel Fells the best moving forward. Sounds like pretty good news coming out from his side right now. Let's hope that continues. But let's move on now with some of the action from last week. And we had highlighted this game, and we've had a history of highlighting some games that we thought were going to be very competitive, and they turned out to be clunkers. Now, this was a game that was competitive early, looked like it was turning into a little bit of a clunker, and ended up being the game of the week. And you got to give the Cincinnati Bengals a lot of credit here, and you got to take a good hard look at a team that we've been taking a good hard look at, the Seattle Seahawks. You know the Seahawks have given up 22 sacks so far this year. Do you know that?
No, I kind of knew that after watching the game the other night because you know they start going through all the stats and you're right. This game, you and I again haven't been right on top of which is going to be the best game to watch. But this one even started to get to the point where we're saying, oh, we screwed it up again, as Seattle had a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter. And I thought I think they, as we discussed last week, I think they thought all of their ills were cured getting Cam Chancellor back, and because they beat the lowly Detroit Lions on a fluke play, that may have, you know, may have even been miscalled by the official. And, you know, they were making such a big deal or they were back, and now all of a sudden you lose this game. And, you know, not they're not in a great spot at this point. So here comes that changing of the guard, as we said. Tough to keep everybody happy, tough to pay everybody. And when you don't, when you lose that second Super Bowl in a row on the play that they lost, it just takes a lot of steam out of you. And now they're kind of going to be, I don't know, swimming upstream for the rest of the season to see what they can make out of it.
I think the biggest problem here with the Seahawks, just focusing on them before we get to the Bengals, is look, Russell Wilson takes a lot of sacks in general because he's a guy who runs around a lot. We'll get tackled 1 yard behind the line of scrimmage, and it will be called a sack. So you know, that's going to happen. You're going to see like the 40 range, but right now, I mean 40. I mean, you're looking at close to 70 sacks for one quarter. I mean, he's going to get sacked 70. I mean, you can take these numbers sometimes and sort of say, okay, there's a pattern here. Obviously, after four games, they've had five games. But after four games, you can't just take numbers and times it by four and say, well, this running back's got 400 yards rushing, so he's going to have 1,600 yards rushing. It doesn't work that way. But just taking a look at it right now, I mean, this is a big problem. And they let a guy go, James Carpenter, for example, who's playing for the Jets, actually playing pretty well. Again, a guy they couldn't pay. Russell Okung, their left tackle. Are they going to have to let him go after this season? They're already having issues with their offensive line. It's really the offense, because they had this 24-7 lead, but they never built on it. They never were able to really get down the field and say, you know what, we're going to put the final nail in the coffin here. They allowed the Bengals to come back. And I actually went away from this game a little bit. I said, well, I'm going to turn this game back on because it's not over. And sure enough, you know, we went to overtime and Mike Nugent, the ex-Jet, you know, got to make your heart race a little bit, dinks it off the upright, but it goes through. So, I mean, give the Bengals all the credit in the world. They're 5-0. They've had a nice run here. Offensively, they've been playing real well. They're second in the league in yardage, 21 yards per game. Fourth in scoring, 29.6. They have a nice array of weapons for Andy Dalton, who I think we all know has to get over the hurdle of trying to win a playoff game, not just be a regular season darling. But you know what? This game, everything was going in Seattle's favor. They had a 17-point lead. And it really was the offense here that can't seem to get going for the Seahawks, and the defense is still pretty good, but it's really the offense that is not at – they were never great, but they were always good enough to maintain that lead and allow the defense to kind of pin their ears back, and I just don't see that now. They are vulnerable, and you know what? The Cardinals are playing some good ball, and you're right. It might be a changing of the guard there. We'll have to see how the rest of the year goes, but it sure is going to be interesting to watch to see if they can rebound from that tough defeat.
Yeah, and if you look at some of their stats, you know, I know Marshawn's been hurt, but, you know, he's got 128 yards for the entire season rushing. You've got, you know, their interception leader. Now, this is Seattle. Their interception leader has one in Earl Thomas. So they're not having the turnovers that they usually did. They're not having the defense win games like they were. You know, they're just not moving the ball around. And it's just, I don't know. It's an odd thing, but we talked about this from the beginning. You know, when you start losing little pieces here and there, it starts to make a difference, and it's stuff that you can't point to, you know, in particular sometimes. But when you look at teams like this and you say, excuse me, you've lost, you know, your slot corner, you've lost, you traded your center because you wanted a tight end. You lost a guy in the offensive line. You lost this. You start losing the little pieces that make the team, that make the whole thing stick together. You know, it just comes back to haunt you a little bit. And then again, you lose Marshawn, you know, to injuries. And I think I texted you at the end of the Giant game the other night. You know, injuries are going to rule this sport now every week. You see guys get hurt. You saw Jamaal Charles go down the other day. Well, Kansas City's been awful as it is, and now you lose him. And, you know, it ruined them for that game. They seemed to stop playing at that point. They just looked awful. They gave up a big lead. And now where do they go for the rest of the year? And it's tough to get injuries. But I think Seattle is just on their way down. I'm not sure he's, you know, Mr. Rah-Rah coach up there. I'm not sure he can bring this team back. If they go – if Carolina goes up into Seattle and beats them, and, it, you know, who's Arizona playing this week? Arizona is playing, where are we? Pittsburgh.
They're playing the Steelers. They're playing at the Steelers. So that could definitely be a win for them. I mean, Michael Vick wasn't exactly, even though they won last night, Michael Vick didn't look so great. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So, you know, where do you stand then? Then you're, you know, then you're way out. And again, it's a long way back, and Arizona look like they're going to, again, barring injuries, doesn't look like they're going to slow down any. So I don't know. I think it's what we thought. I think it could be the year that they disappear.
Yeah, let's take a look at this real quick. I mean, Byron Maxwell went to the Eagles, and, you know, they replaced him with Kyrie Williams, and Kyrie Williams was getting picked on the whole game against Cincinnati. So that was – and Jimmy Graham, I mean, I realize that the Saints were looking to move salary and this and that, but was Jimmy Graham really the answer? We discussed this about how he's not happy with his role in the offense, and I discussed James Carpenter, a guy who they lost two guys who were fairly important to their offensive line. Let's take a look at this some offensive statistics for the Seahawks. Still first in rushing, 26th in passing, 15th overall, 18th in scoring. So, and their defense is still pretty. I mean, they're still fifth overall defense, 9th in scoring, but they are 2-3 right now. You are where your record says you are, and give the Bengals all the credit in the world. They could have folded their tents up and just sort of went away, but I know you're probably not the biggest fan of Adam Jones, but he did make some plays in this game, punt returning and some interceptions and things like that. The Bengals defense is pretty good. They're ranked 10th, so, you know, as far as scoring. So again, look, we were kind of down on the Bengals, but maybe they're regular season for real.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm not a fan of anybody on that team, but I think that what we called last week was, you know, I think we both picked the Bengals and said this was a big, big week for them, and this was that's why this was gonna be a good game to watch, because we were gonna see if they were gonna be for real or if they were just gonna win a couple of games and then go into a little bit of a streak here. But like you said, they could have walked away and said, "Oh, look who we're playing," or, you know, whatever, and it doesn't really matter. It's not in our conference. You know, we can suffer a conference loss and not get killed here. But they came back and played well, and you know, I'm not saying they're for real, but certainly the way Baltimore's playing and the way, you know, Pittsburgh's still in a little bit of trouble there, they're obviously going to be good in their division, and that's what counts. And we'll see where they go from here.
Yeah, I mean, right now, obviously, at 5-0, and with the talent that they have, you could certainly – I mean, again, they were one of the teams we expected maybe not to make the playoffs. The two teams, we were talking about them and the Ravens. Obviously, the Ravens are having their issues, but maybe Cincinnati, as far as, again, making the playoffs again. But are they going to be out on Saturday if they do, as it has been the trend? I guess we'll have to wait and see how the rest of the season goes. One of the reasons why I wanted, besides the fact that this was a terrific game and the Seahawks and the Bengals, is because of the upcoming this week's slate of games. You know, the Bengals are at the Bills. Now, the Bills did defeat the Tennessee Titans 14-13, a close game. You would figure it would be a close game. Tennessee at home, coming off a bye week. Buffalo, a little banged up at the wide receiver position. Tyrod Taylor, they struggled on offense. They got the W, and sometimes it's a sign of a pretty decent team that can still struggle and win. But it looks like Tyrod Taylor is going to be out for a while with a sprained MCL. They did sign Josh Johnson, who was there with Greg Roman in San Francisco. Also, Josh Johnson was with the Jets in the preseason, and they released him. And he was with the Colts for a little while, kind of maybe to back up EJ Manuel now. So EJ Manuel is going to start that game, it looks like, right now. Bengals at the Bills. So why don't we kind of go into that game, Joe? Is a good time to kind of jump into that since we're discussing the Bengals. What are your feelings? I mean, this might be one of those letdown games. That's what I'm looking at it like. Maybe for Cincinnati going on the road after a big victory at home, maybe a letdown. Could you see that happening, or you just think backup quarterback now coming in, Cincinnati is just too good?
You know, the problem with Buffalo is, and again, we both thought they were going to be better than they've been, and I thought they were going to be much better than they've been. I think it's just, again, it's these injuries. You know, they still haven't played with LeSean McCoy yet. They still, you know, Sammy Watkins has been out. So you've got half your team, and now you lose your starting quarterback. So I don't know what he's going to come up with. And again, we're not talking about an absolute genius as a offensive head coach. And you know, to almost lose to, I thought they were going to lose to Tennessee last week. To be able to score 14 points there, I think you're going to need to come up with more. And I'm not sure they can. I think this is the point about going up against the Bengals, who have a very good defense. and a decent offense and can be, you know, a very good offense, you're going to have to score some points this week. And I'm not sure that having a backup quarterback, no Sammy Watkins, no LeSean McCoy, and whoever else they're missing is going to be the right time for this to happen. It's, again, you play who's on your schedule and you play them when you play them. So no excuses, and nobody cares if you're hurt. But I think this is Rex's kind of, you know, if this season's going to be anything, he's kind of make a stand here. And otherwise they're going to be in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if I think Watkins is probable for this game. I mean, again, right now it's still early in the week, but I'm trying to see if LeSean McCoy here. I know he was declared inactive for week 5. He's still dealing with that hamstring. He's been dealing with it the whole time. You know what? EJ Manuel is kind of an interesting guy, though, in this regard. I watched him pick apart the Jets a couple of years ago and pick them apart with short passing, and he was pretty accurate. And you would have thought maybe that was kind of more of what he would have been. I don't know if they really lose that much, to tell you the truth, from him to Tyrod Taylor. Watkins will probably play in this game. I just look at it like this. You're right about the Bills struggled on offense against Tennessee. They did. But they were only a slight favorite in that game. And a lot of people were picking Tennessee to win that game. And I got to give them credit for not playing their A game, but still winning it. I do think this. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that the Bills are going to win this game. I think the Bills are going to win this game just because I think the stars are going to align for them. They're at home. Cincinnati coming off a big win. And I think their defense is good enough. Look, I watched their defense on the field for most of that game. Hold Tennessee. I know Tennessee has a rookie quarterback in that, but hold them to 13 points. And you know what? They have a championship caliber defense. I think they can get the job done in Buffalo. If this was in Cincinnati, it might be a different story. But I think they can get the job done there. But you're right. They got to get these guys back and get them healthy and get them productive, especially McCoy down the stretch here. If they're going to be a playoff contender, it's going to be very important for them to get McCoy back on the field.
Yeah, again, I think this is all comes down to if he's got his full team. I can see them winning the game, especially if Sammy's back. And again, I think that I don't think you lose much with EJ only because he's been there. It's not like they had to go out and find somebody or it's a it's a Michael Vick situation, where he's not going to be prepared or whatever. It's an early enough change, and he knew he was going to have to play. So I don't think you lose much quarterback either. I think you're correct there. And, again, he's got some history with Sammy Watkins. They played together. So it's not like you're integrating a different person in here, some stranger into the offense. So I can see them winning the game. And, again, it's on the road. Cincinnati's got to go on the road. I don't know what the weather's going to be like. It's kind of early to worry about weather. But I think it'll be decent. I just don't think Buffalo's – until they're whole, I don't think they're going to be able to pull off a win like this. Although, like you said, it could be a little letdown after coming back and meeting Seattle. But I don't see Seattle as being this big rivalry against Cincinnati that they would have gotten – I don't see the letdown being that big. I think they're on a roll. I think they see the prize in front of them. They see the teams in their division struggling. They can make a statement, take a big lead. So I'm not sure about that. Not that I'm thrilled with Marvin Lewis as a head coach that he knows how to get past that. But I think it'll be decent. But I would pick Cincinnati if I had to go against you. So if we're going to make our picks of the week, this is the one you and I diverge on, and we'll go from there.
Well, I think also, I mean, maybe we'll make the statement of the week, which last week we were right on the money. Little did we know it would be kind of an odd way of getting the game of the week, but this looks like a competitive matchup to me. I mean, I think this is going to be a very good game, a physical game. You know, again, there's a lot on the line for both teams here. You just mentioned Cincinnati wants to make a statement, maybe put some more distance between them and the teams behind them if they lose a game. But Buffalo's sitting at 3-2. I mean, 4-2 puts them right in the mix there. 3-3, you know what? Your 3-3 is just like everybody else. You're a 500 team. Like how many other teams in this league are 500 after 6 games? I mean, what we're starting to see now is a little bit of separation. It's still too early, I guess, because some teams could surprise you, maybe like a Miami if they win, which is maybe we can get into this quickly. quickly, I wanted to bring it up, and here's why. Dolphins are playing at Tennessee, and both of them had a bye week, so they're both 1-3. So one of them is going to move to 2-3. And I just wonder, again, Miami, in my opinion, was not playing for Philbin at all. I think they just didn't care. And we discussed Campbell last week. He's come in with a really different attitude, a different mentality. The, hey, I'm an interim coach. You know what? I don't know if I'm going to be the head coach next year. They, like you discussed, they might want to bring in John Gruden, and I might be out. So you know what, gang? I'm not here to win a popularity contest. If you don't like it, tough. You're going to work. And he's had them out there working. So maybe these guys are going to come to attention and wake up and say, hey, you know what? We better fly right. Otherwise, we're going to just be practicing harder and doing a lot more work. If we do the right things, maybe he backs off us a little bit. Do you kind of see that? Because if the Dolphins – look, the Dolphins win this game, they're 2-3 and their season is saved. They lose, they're 1-4, and maybe maybe you can almost write their season off.
Yeah, you know, and that's why, you know, going back to Buffalo just for a second, that's why I was saying this is kind of like their – you know, this is he's got to make the stand here, and I don't know if this is I don't know if this is his spot or not. I think we're starting to get a little bit, like you say, separation with some of these things. I think we're starting to see some teams make some make their point of who they're going to be this year. And again, I think some of these games are very, very pivotal in that point, and. I don't know. I just think that it is kind of early, and like you said, difference between 2-4 and 4-2. But it's all about your division, and you start to look at the East. And even though Buffalo gets kind of back in it, are they anywhere close to, you know, catching New England, who looks like they're just on their way to another 14-2 season? So I'm not sure where all this takes us.
I think it's more about the wild card, Joe. I mean, really, honestly, yeah. I realize that. I mean, as much as I hate to say it, I mean, the Jets are sitting at 3-1. But look, I mean, what makes me think that New England isn't winning 12 or 13 games this year? I don't believe the Jets are a 12 or 13 win team. But as far as the wild card goes, you know what? You know how tough 9 or 10 wins is probably your wild cards. 9 or 10 wins, maybe 11. Mm-hmm. Maybe 11 is the first wild card, and 10 or 9 is the second one. And all these tiebreaker scenarios, all these things. Getting back to Miami quickly, I mean, they play at Tennessee, then they're home against Houston. I mean, look, I'm looking at it this way, and I'm a Jets fan. But you know what? The Jets are playing Washington this week, and Washington's no pushover. They gave Atlanta everything they could handle and then some. And you know this because your first place Giants, but they're only up by one game. We're going to get into the game with them in Philadelphia in a minute. But so Washington's no – why can't the Jets be 3-3 at the after 2 weeks, and the Dolphins be 3-3. I mean, is that the most ridiculous statement you can hear? I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if it did, I wouldn't be shocked, because Miami could win two games and the Jets could lose to Washington, and they go to up to Foxborough to play the Patriots, so they could be 3-3. This is why the Jets can't take the Redskins lightly. So, I mean, would that shock you if I told you that happened, that those two teams went that direction?
No, not at all. I think that, like you said, anything could happen in Miami now, because you don't know. You know that, again, they've made the change and they expect something different. So now we're going to see if it comes about or not. But we don't know. We know nothing about him. We know nothing about how they're going to respond. We know nothing about that team at this moment. And with the Jets, you know, what do we always say about the Jets? Nothing's going to surprise you. I could see you guys being, you know, I could see you getting all the way to 6-1, but I can't. Or I could see you being 3-3. It's anything could happen in that spot, and you're right. It's all about getting wild card position and playing different teams. So I think these are all big games. I don't see Cincinnati letting down, and I don't see – and, I think the Jets have all they can handle. I think they know it in Washington. I think that they know Washington's got a good defense. I don't see a lot of points coming out of that game. If you want to talk about the Jets and Washington right now, I think they both have very good defenses and not much offense to speak of. And, you know, Kirk Cousins, again, does what Kirk Cousins does, throws pick sixes and throws interceptions all over the place and doesn't make great decisions. And, you know, the Jets are the Jets. Sometimes they play excellent and sometimes they're just not very good. So I think we're right in the middle of this spot where you've got to keep your head above water. And again, certain teams know that you're playing just for a wild card at this point, because there are a lot of teams that have some, a lot of league leaders, a lot of division leaders that seem like they're on their way. And doesn't look like, unless something happens to them, that, you know, they're not going to do it to themselves. You're going to need to have something happen to one of their big players.
Yeah, excuse me, Green Bay certainly would be one of them that you look at and say, we're not catching them, the Minnesota Vikings. How about this? We got two games left that we want to kind of highlight. Something we've been discussing, the Panthers, who are coming off a bye week at Seattle. Now, Seattle obviously plays better at home. They've been on the road for three games. They've been home for two. Let me check what their home and road. I think they've been on the road for three and home for two. So let's double check that. Here at home, 2-0. Yeah, 2-0 at home, 0-3 on the road. Surprise, surprise. They're at home against a good Panthers team who's getting Luke Kuechly back finally after this concussion, which, you know, kept them out for quite a while. And, you know, obviously head injuries are nothing to mess around with. Little bit of concern, I think, would have to be if you're a fan of the Carolina Panthers, you have to be concerned about his future. Hopefully he doesn't, and this is not something that's chronic with the head injuries. But, you know, big for them to get him back. And this looks like it's going to be the Panthers are undefeated. Atlanta's got a game up on them because they won that game against Washington. So, you know what, as far as divisions go, looks like it's going to be a two-horse race in that division. And again, the team that doesn't ultimately win the division, are they going to have enough wins to get a wild card? I mean, the NFC is better than the AFC. So, I mean, could you see a 10-win team maybe being on the outside looking in? Did that happen last year? Was there an 11-win team that, or was it 2 years ago? Cardinals who had 11 wins 2 years ago and they didn't make the playoffs? So, you know, you got to win. You got to win when you can. And the Seahawks are vulnerable. Look, they have all lines at home. What do you think about this game? I think another competitive matchup here that could go the way.
Yeah, and it's funny. The last they played in 2013 and 2014, and the score of the game in 2013 was 12-7, and the score of the game in 2014 was 13-9. And then, of course, Seattle beat them in the divisional playoff, but 31-17. So I don't know. I think this is another one of those. Only because it's in Seattle. I'll tell you, if this game was in Carolina, I'd probably pick Carolina, as much as I detest Carolina. And I don't think Cam Newton is all he's cracked up to be, or at least has not, didn't reach his potential the way he should have earlier in his career. He's obviously playing well now, even though they don't have much around him. And they just keep getting rid of guys, but they keep finding new ones to play. This one could be the reason we picked it, we think it could be a good game. I think because it's in Seattle and because they may be playing for their playoff lives, even though it's early in the season, I think they have to get a win here. And I think it'll be another low scoring, tough game. But I'd pick Seattle if I had to pick one.
All right, you know, I think I would agree with you. You know, there's a couple guys banged up a little bit, Bobby Wagner maybe a little bit there, and you're right. They play well at home, and I know the Panthers come off the week and they go out there. But you're right. The Seahawks don't want to go to 2-4, and I think they squeak out the victory in a grind them out kind of fashion. I think you could definitely see that from both teams here. But let's move on and kind of finish up with this one, which is right up your alley, which is great because the first place New York Giants are at the second place with everybody else, Philadelphia Eagles.
The rest of the team.
With the rest of the division. Monday night game, nationally televised game, should really be good. Kind of the Eagles, the Saints, I mean, I think the Saints just basically gave them the game. It seemed like Bradford had a couple red zone turnovers, and then the Saints just started fumbling and throwing interceptions, and it was like the onslaught was on. But what do you think? What are your feelings on this game from a Giants perspective? I'll give it from the objective view, and you can give me the partisan point of view from the Giants fan perspective.
I think if you watched the Eagle game last week, which I did, you know they didn't look very good either, especially in the beginning. But like you said, Drew Brees couldn't hold on to the football in the second half. Every time somebody got near him, he dropped it on the ground, and they didn't get it back. And you know, they made a big deal about, the Eagles scored two touchdowns in 17 seconds. Well, when you fumble the ball on the 10-yard line after the kickoff, the other team scores in very quick fashion. So, you know, it wasn't like they had long drives. I thought they had a weird stat And maybe this is the change. This is what you and I have been talking about, Dennis, for a couple of weeks. The guys who did the game said, look, we're starting to see maybe a little bit of an adjustment from Chip Kelly. That instead of saying, this is my system and I don't care who the players are, to say, these are the players I have, so I need to tweak my system a little bit. DeMarco Murray got a few extra yards. They figured out a way to get him the ball more. They got the ball to Darren Sproles a little bit more. So they ran the ball more. They also said that they ran a play, I don't know, something like 26.7 seconds versus the, you know, he wants to run one every 21 seconds or something like this. And the fact that he's letting Bradford get up there and kind of read what's there and make some changes and put themselves in the best position and, again, play to their strengths a little bit more instead of just playing, this is the way we play football and doesn't matter who's on the field. So if that's the case, then obviously we have our work cut out for them because they are a talented team. I'm not crazy, but, you know, they have a very good tight end in Celek. They have good running backs, obviously, in Sproles and Murray and Matthews. And, you know, they have a decent wide receiving core, which, you know, so the Giants have to do what they normally do and what they've done is be number one against the run. You need to force Sam Bradford into throwing the ball. And if you can do that, you'll have a chance. And that's how the Giants' season has gone. That's their philosophy for the year, is if we're tough up front, we'll put it in the hands of your quarterback, and we'll keep everybody in front of us, and we'll make you take 12, 14, 15 plays to go down the field. And then, you know, see if we can't get you to make a mistake on that point, get some turnovers, do some different things. But time of possession of the game, obviously, all that kind of stuff is very, very important. And playing good run defense will be the key to this game.
Now, maybe you could just update us on some of the injury statuses of the Giants. I know Beeson's in the concussion protocol, and you know some of your wide receivers, Beckham. I know he was out, then back in with the hamstring. And you know, can you kind of just update us where the Giants are right now with their injuries?
Yeah, I would, except the players are off today, and so they really haven't figured out. You know, they don't really know. This is the day that they go to the doctor. They get MRIs yesterday. And so they have to come back, and they talked to Mr. Talkative Coughlin, and he said, "Yeah, as soon as I know, I'll let you know." But you know, you're still looking for Victor to come back. Beckham is always going to have these little hamstring problems. Reuben Randall had the same thing, but they said he seemed to be okay the next day, wasn't limping. What you really need back, and I texted you about this the other night during the game. You need Jonathan Casillas. You need Devin Kennard back because that's the speed part of that linebacking core that can chase down a Darren Sproles. That's the speed part that keeps the run from getting around the corner. And you saw it the other night when Mark Herzlich, who, again, we all love, he's a great player, he's a wonderful person, but he doesn't have that kind of speed. And if he takes the wrong angle, he gets beat. And you saw it a few times. Chris Collinsworth wasn't too kind to him, saying if he had to go back to the combine now, he probably wouldn't get drafted. But you know, this is what they're missing with these injuries is some of the speed, and that's going to be a key to this. So I don't know exactly where they are because they haven't announced it yet. But all of those small injuries that seem to crop up, you know, even with Robert Ayers, I mean, I'd like to have him back against Sam Bradford. So we'll have to see where it goes with injuries and hopefully they can get some of their speed guys back.
Now, on offense, I wanted to ask you a little bit. I mean, he's going to be a key in this game, I think, and he's been a pretty nice pickup for you guys. We discussed him earlier. It's Shane Vereen. I mean, could you see him playing quite a significant role in this game if some of the wide receivers are maybe just limited in some ways? I mean, even if they come back healthy but maybe have to give him a little bit of break here or there, you can see Vereen get a few more touches, even running the ball out of the backfield or maybe some shorter kind of screen passes kind of thing to kind of control the clock, maybe get 4 or 5 yards on first down and make it second and manageable.
Yeah, I think Tom said it the other day. He said, you know, the more we have him here, the more we see what he can do, you know, the more plays we can stick in there for him, the more plays we can come up with for him, the more things we can use in a game. And you know, he was instrumental on that last drive, as as some people said, he was the only guy out there anybody knew who what his name was. And he said, you know, excuse me, Eli had to be looking around the huddle saying, who are you guys? But he knew that Shane Vereen was there. And again, he's very, very good at, you know, making sure his pass blocking responsibility is taken care of and then leaking out and catching passes out of the backfield. And I think you'll see him used more and more and more. And again, they can stick him in the slot when they want to. They can move him around and put him in different places so that he can even have him and Jennings in there. Jennings has been catching the ball nicely also this year, and I'm sure he's learning some stuff from Shane because Rashad's like a sponge. He picks up stuff and always wants to improve. So I think that I think he becomes a very key part of this offense, especially if it takes Victor longer and longer to come back.
You know what? We're going to kind of one last thing I want to kind of hit on before we wrap up another fantastic episode of Pro Football View from the East, Joe, is you said the Giants put a lot of money in their special teams. One of the things about the Eagles when I was kind of previewing the Jets game was I knew that they had good special teams, and they ended up getting a touchdown. Darren Sproles returned a punt for a touchdown in that game against the Jets, which was one of many things that ultimately broke their back early on, even though the Jets came back a little bit in the second half. Philadelphia did their best to, you know, let the Jets kind of hang around, but they didn't have enough steam to overcome a 24-point deficit. But you really got to be careful about the special teams aspects here of the Philadelphia Eagles. They scored a lot of points last year on special teams. So do you feel a little more confident with some of the guys, Harris, and some of the guys you have on special teams that you can kind of match them because they're known to be very talented on their special teams?
Yeah, and I think this is half the reason or part of the reason Tom did this, and Jerry Reese went out and made this commitment this year of playing, you know, they're playing Rashad Jennings on punt, you know, coverages, you know, having him block punts, and they're having Cooper Taylor and guys like that out there who are really athletic, and they got a lot of athletic guys on there. Their special teams have been terrific this year compared to what we're used to. I don't know what their averages are. I'm sure I could look them up pretty quick, but you know, they've really, really improved on starting field position for the other team. If you try to take the ball out of the end zone, it seems nobody ever gets past I'm just going to look this up real quick. Nobody ever gets past 20. It's just amazing how well they've done. And it's big for them. You know, their defense is not the strongest part of their team, but if you can start a team inside their 20 – you know, over and over and over again, it starts to wear on them, and it keeps their playbook from being completely open. And it's really important for them to have done what they did. If you watch Brad Wing, again, everybody loved Steve Weatherford, but if you watch Wing punt, when he punts from the middle of the field where he can't stick it inside the 10, it always lands between the numbers and the side. And so it gives them the best way to get started there and to defend against a big run back. So they've really, really done a nice drive. Done a nice work with this of getting their special teams settled in and getting a little bit of dynamics to them also with Harris.
Yeah. Do you have any numbers there that you may have pulled up in front of you?
It shows the other way around. You know, that, well, for 54 drives, the Giants have only started inside their own 26 times, which means, you know, they're really making an effort there to get the ball out, mm-hmm. and that the return is so much better as compared to the Cowboys, who have started 17 times mm-hmm. inside their 20. So, you know, they're number one in the league, basically, starting inside their own 20, which is amazing. And, you know, again, this team has not been known for their special team. So I don't know if I can find it the other way around or not. It's not something that's that they use too much.
All right, while you're looking for it, we'll just kind of recap that. I think that this is going to be at all the games we picked, this one might be the best one. First of all, it's a rivalry game. I mean, let's face it. I mean, these two teams don't like each other forever. Number two is it's a division game, and number three, it's for first place. I mean, Philadelphia wins; they're 3-3. The Giants are 3-3. Who knows? Maybe the Redskins are 3-3. Obviously, Dallas is on a bye week, so they stay where they are. So you could have a three-way tie. You could have if Philadelphia loses, they go to 2-4. The Redskins could win and go to 3-3. The Redskins could lose and go to 2, and the Giants could give themselves a little separation there. So this one's going to definitely is one you should. It's great that it's on a Monday night and that's a nationally televised game, because this is one you want to circle, folks. You're a fan of the NFL, because this one's going to be a good one. It's going to be competitive, and you're going to see some licks being laid out there, because these teams, they just don't like each other.
Yeah, no, this will be a good, tough game, and I guess it's the same, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. This is the same game. You know, the Giants started 0-2 last year and then won 3 in a row and then went to Philadelphia. So it's except that they went on a Sunday night instead of on a Monday night. So I think this is, again, one of those games where he's going to, you know, Tom's going to bring this up. I'm sure it's all over the place. That they lost this game and they probably shouldn't have lost this game last year. And that they need to, you know, make a difference this year. Play it a little bit different, make sure that they play the entire game. You know, they lost again, Victor in this game last year to the knee injury, and that kind of set him back a little bit. And so I think that they've been pointing to this, you know, a lot, and that they're looking for this game to be a little bit different. So here's our punting statistics a little bit here. 13 out of, so they have 20, they've punted 22 times, which is not a lot of punts, which is nice to hear. And 13 of them have been inside the 20. So pretty good.
With one
block. You know, not too bad. Just trying to see if there's anything pertinent here. Return 9 returns for a total of 53 yards on punt returns. 9 returns for a total of 53 yards. Pretty good. So it's 6 yards a return.
That's where your punt team is stopping the other team. So the other team is averaging about 6 yards per return. Now that is very good. Those are very good numbers. They're very solid, and you could understand why they maybe put some resources into that.
Yeah. So you know that's something that again you can see has made a difference on this team, because you're doing stuff. And then let's just go really quickly to kickoff returns. 31 kickoffs, and with 14 touchbacks, so half of them have been touchbacks. 17
okay.
returns for 378. So what's that? 17 returns for 378.
Sounds a little bit under 20. Sounds like it's under 20. I'm doing quick math in my head.
22.2. Yeah,
22.2. Oh, not bad. That's not bad, because you.
And half of them
are
been
think.
Touchbacks. So
touchbacks.
They gave up a run back of 73 yards for a touchdown. So if you
what's killing their average.
Yeah, so 370 divided by 16. Let's take that one out. It's even lower. So again, they put some resources into it, and obviously it's paid off. If you're giving up an average of 20 yards on your kickoffs from the end zone, right? You know, it's 20 yards. The return comes from where the guy catches it, not from the goal line. And your punts, you're averaging 6 yards of return on the punts. You obviously have made some difference in your special teams by doing what they did. So the Giants did put some resources in their special teams, and they obviously have come up with some results, and hopefully it all continues.
Yeah, you know, just to kind of go back to what you're saying, it was week 6 last year when Cruz got hurt. They lose 27-0, and, you know, that kind of carried over a little bit for the Giants for the rest of the season, unfortunately for them. But that will be a great game, be great to watch. A lot of interesting aspects of that. I wanted to bring the special teams up because I knew that the Giants had put resources into it, and I know that Philadelphia already was known to have pretty solid special teams. But with that, Joe, I mean, look, just again, it's very exciting. This week was just storylines left and right. I mean, the Chiefs, they lose Jamal Charles. They lose the Chicago Bears, who look like they couldn't get out of their own way, and they come back in that game. Just you know, the war of attrition continues for a lot of teams. Last night I watched a lot of San Diego Charger linemen go down. Again, they can't seem to catch a break. It's just every week there's another storyline. Every week it gets more and more interesting. But in a few weeks, we'll kind of be able to start to look at and say, okay, who's for real and who's not? Who are we looking at as playoff contenders, division leaders, those kind of things? It'll be very exciting to kind of follow those storylines as we move forward in the season. But, Joe, I want to thank you for hopping aboard and giving us another fantastic episode of Pro Football View from the East today.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Always enjoy talking to you, and it's been nice to catch up during the games. Now I think we both have a little bit more time. We were able to text back and forth and get some thoughts in while we're watching the games, and it's been very interesting.
Yeah, that's been great. My schedule's been a little packed with some of the stuff I was doing with the Jets, but calmed down a little bit now. But gang, listen, if you want to give Joe or myself a follow on Twitter and keep up with what's going on with the show, my Twitter handle is PFVFE or at PFVFE. Joe's Twitter handle is at Tufton, TUFDAN. Of course, we'd love any feedback. If you have any on the show, you can hit us up there on Twitter. So for Joe Tufaro, this is Dennis Agapito. Please join us next week for another fantastic episode of Pro Football View from the East.